Welcome to Federal Insights for July, Network Transformation and Modernization, sponsored by Hughes Networks.
It's not a big agency, but it is an influential one. The Office of Personnel Management, therefore, has computing and cybersecurity challenges all of its own. For a bit about OPM's own modernization efforts, I spoke with the senior advisor to the director, Curtis Muir.
Like a lot of federal agencies, we have a legacy data center and a legacy network. And so recently, we kicked off an initiative with the CIO to do a sprint to the cloud. The cloud's been something a lot of agencies have been after, including us, for many years. And now is the time to actually get there. So we were happy to select Azure as our provider. And we really have initiatives on two fronts. The first are, you know, migrating current systems into the cloud where we can. And that's a lot about governance and a lot about how do we just move things off of the blades in the basement into the providers spread throughout the US. The next then is really getting full use of the cloud, and that's redevelopment. And so we're slating for hopefully towards the end of the year to really deploy some new systems to the cloud using auto scaling, you know, really having an automated CI/CD pipeline running so that we're getting the maximum value from that procurement, as opposed to just making sure we don't have to maintain that room in the basement that might flood or the power might go out or the air conditioning might go out. You know, that's great, but you're still not getting everything you need.
Sure. And how does the cybersecurity improvement picture fit into all of the modernization you're doing?
Yeah. So cybersecurity is this ongoing marathon that we've been on for many, many years. And OPM is no stranger to this. You know, a lot of really, really great work was done, you know, kind of post-2016 or right in that 2016 timeframe. And we did a phenomenal job of securing the data centers we had. But now, just like everybody else, we've got to make that pivot towards the cloud and really having cloud-enabled cybersecurity tools. And so while we had physical firewalls previously, we're moving to virtual ones where we used to just have TIC running in our data centers. We've now got to have TIC running in our cloud provider. We need a zero trust architecture so that it's properly implemented all the way to the edge and all the way to the core. And so those are all sprints that are ongoing as part of this cloud initiative, as we look to change our cybersecurity posture kind of from protecting the perimeter to protecting it all.
Yeah, that idea of the zero trust, we hear so many agencies talking about that. And of course, the executive order from the White House a couple of months ago makes explicit reference to zero trust, which is really an architecture, but it also requires the installation of challenge response types of mechanisms, whatever that might be, authentication throughout the network. And do you have a way of thinking about that at this point?
So, I mean, I'm a big fan of brutal honesty with what you have running in your network. You know, oftentimes you can take kind of this favorable lens on whether you think you're protecting all of the resources inside the network or not. And in order to get every device, you really need to go one by one to verify that, you know, you have that challenge response implemented from soup to nuts. And so we are taking a one by one methodology. We're going to go device by device through the network to implement this, you know, starting with our cloud instance and then getting all the way to those legacy items that are going to have to exist in a data center for a while.
Yes, I was going to get back to the data center question as you move to cloud instances and revamp applications so that they are cloud suitable. You will still have a data center for OPM for the foreseeable future?
For at least the next couple of years as we migrate. You know, it's just kind of it comes with the territory. You know, we are going through an analysis that scores, you know, systems on which ones should go and which ones should go soonest based on how old they are, how brittle they are, when we're going to have to replace the hardware, how reliant they are on the legacy network, things like that. But the reality is, if you've ever done a cloud migration, they don't happen overnight. You know, you can't just flip a switch, as much as I would love to do that. And you can talk to plenty of people that have tried to flip that switch and ask them how it's gone. And it tends to be they go for an outage for many, many weeks at a time. And so given, you know, we run hiring for the federal government, we run retiring for the federal government. These aren't services we take lightly. And we need to be very deliberate in how we make sure that, you know, that service continues, while we migrate it to a more stable platform, a more modern platform, and a more secure platform.
I should know this, but usajobs.gov, is that hosted by OPM or by GSA?
USAJobs is hosted by us.
Got it. Okay, so that's really about as critical an application mission-wise as it gets. And so right now that is still in-house, but over time you'd like to get it. I guess by cloud hosting, you could have multiple instances across the country and then get rid of some of the latency.
Correct.
And redundancy would be in there kind of organically and so on.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And that brings up the question then of when you are thinking about all of these cloud instances and maintaining a data center and load balancing and all of the other aspects of this, what about the communications protocols among all of the resources? How will that work? And are you looking to update?
What do you mean by that?
Well, the telecom carriers and the network protocols that you use now, say you're on, I'm just guessing, MPLS, for example. Are you looking to update those transport mechanisms also as you look
at? We're migrating to, you know, like an express route provider from Azure. And then that means we can push to CDN directly out at the edge from Azure. And what that provides is a lot of security for us because we can better understand our connections. But then it also provides better service for the website itself. I'm a big fan of running website metrics and understanding exactly how our users experience that website. The team will tell you at least once a month I go run the stats on USA Jobs. So I know, you know, how long is it time to first paint, you know, time to page load, all the other stuff, just so we're cognizant of, you know, what changes we're making and what that experience looks like, you know, as we just move forward.
Curtis Muir, Senior Advisor to the Director of the Office of Personnel Management. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Citizen-focused government means digital service delivery to constituents. The EIS contract replaces legacy networks with reliable, scalable, and secure broadband connections. And managed SD-WAN from Hughes allows agencies to utilize cloud-based applications with in-depth cybersecurity protections. Time is critical. Do not accept like for like. Ask your prime contractors about the Hughes Managed SD-WAN solution or visit government.hughes.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Curtis Muir, Senior Advisor to the Director of the Office of Personnel Management. Our topic is IT modernization, networks, and cybersecurity. And OPM, I guess like so many other agencies, was and is, as we speak, largely teleworking because of the pandemic. In fact, I can see you are in a room with dormers, and I'm sure there's no federal office of the 21st century that has slanted ceilings and dormers, so I'm presuming you're working from home also. What has been the OPM's particular strategy to keep people well-equipped and operating? Let's go with what you've done so far in the pandemic, or the soon-to-be-over, we hope, pandemic.
Yeah. So, you know, just like every other federal agency, I think OPM had to pivot to telework rather quickly in 2020. You know, this wasn't a large scale kind of plan that the agency had in place. And so a lot of really great work by the former OPM CIO, Claire Montemarano, who's now the federal CIO, to really just get the VPN stood up and really scale out what were just normal telework resources to be able to promote, you know, what we would traditionally think of as remote work. Now, that stabilized everything and it got everybody out of the office. And we got safety first and we were able to protect everybody. You know, as we look at zero trust architecture, the VPN isn't something, frankly, we want running any longer. It's kludgy, it fails in ways you don't like, and it creates a lot of complexities that you frankly don't need any longer. And so as part of our initiative to migrate to zero trust and to think about work long-term, you know, getting rid of things like the VPN is probably first and foremost. And then also thinking about how we procure and deploy equipment has also become, you know, kind of an important topic as we move forward. I think we got okay at buying and shipping equipment, but we need to really get a proactive posture as we're going to start to go into that equipment refresh cycle, as we think about should people be able to print long-term, Do they need to print? And what are the other types of things we should be providing them? Things like a microphone right in front of me, if they're going to be working from home for a much longer period of time.
Yes, in some ways, the picture is getting a little bit more complicated because as telework policies begin to seep out from the agencies and, you know, mid-July, they were supposed to have them. And, you know, these things take longer than expected and each agency operates differently. But, you know, again, looking at OPM for what you can answer for, do you expect there to be some kind of hybrid policy where a given person would have more telework flexibility than they had before, and therefore they have to be maybe duly supported? That is to say, they have to have the stuff they need remotely or at home, but then if they come in for a collaborative situation into the office, they have to be supported there too.
Yeah, so, you know, I can tell you that the work environment of the future doesn't look like the work environment of the past. You know, the specifics of how that relates to remote work and telework, I think we're still working out. You know, just at OPM, there's, you know, 2,500 employees in addition to all the contractors. And we're spread across the entire U.S., across, you know, many diverse missions. And so we've got to work through those nuances. I can tell you we've been through a robust planning effort to look at how do we, you know, create environments where people can productively work together if we have some people in the office and some people not in the office. Those are equipment challenges, they're software challenges, and they're also just cultural challenges that we have to be very deliberate about to make sure that we're supporting the mission of the agency and we're supporting our team throughout that, you know, life cycle.
Got it. So that means, for example, from a technical standpoint, maybe no more desktop PCs ever, because you're not going to have two laptops for everyone or two computers, one at the office and one at home, but portables are portable.
Yeah. And I can tell you, we already have very, very few desktop computers in the agency.
Yes.
We made that migration a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, you have a lot of company in that sense. And what about provisioning communications for people? That is to say, you know, you've got your comm carriers that are providing the signal that becomes your Ethernet inside your agency at the office. But at home, people have Verizon, they have Comcast, they have this, that, and the other as their home networks. And somehow those, you can't support all of that, but you have to interact with it in a safe way. What do you have do you think about that one?
Yeah, we do think about that quite a bit. Again, this goes out to our, how do we replace our VPN? You know, we historically, you could lean on the VPN as a somewhat of a safety blanket. I don't know it. These days, it is as safe as we want it to be. But, you know, zero trust architectures really help us have that additional level of security because we're not just trying to protect at the edge or the front door. We've really got multiple mechanisms all the way through to help protect against our, you know, any issues with a carrier.
Right. And I guess in the early days of the BYOD movement, which was controversial, not every agency liked the idea, the D, the device in that acronym, really ranged widely to people trying to get heard Game Boys or, you know, gaming consoles as their D in their BYOD. Less of that nowadays. Most people do have a smartphone or their own laptop, so it's maybe a little bit narrowed in terms of what's reasonable to expect to have to help them support. Fair enough?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Now, I'll tell you, we're still in a posture of providing equipment. We're still going to be providing equipment to our employees as it's not only the best way to help ensure cybersecurity, but also, frankly, just stable operations.
Sure. And I just wanted to touch on the detail you mentioned, printing. This is coming up a lot more now as agencies realize people will be home more. And sometimes you just got to print. I mean, I've been working, I got my first company-issued computer back around 1984, if I recall right. And, you know, we're still printing. We are, you know, 40 years later, people are still printing I still print every day. That can get not only expensive, but it introduces a new cyber possibility. And so what's the early thinking on getting people to be able to print?
Yeah. So I admittedly print probably more often than I would like to admit. You know, it's probably once a week. I'll tell you, the way printers connect to computers creates a real cybersecurity risk. That's just through and through. Printers have been a long-standing challenge for cybersecurity posture, and they get even worse when you have those printers spread all throughout the US on all different carriers. And those things are also probably connected through Wi-Fi or another mechanism to some central printing mechanism, whether it's HP or Dell or another. So you could, you know, cloud print. At the moment, we have paused on enabling wide-scale printing from home at the agency. And we are going through an analysis to figure out what a long-term print capability could look like. I think it's probably going to look much more like us having to buy printers and ship them to people that are configured in the way we know are secure. Because, you know, for better or worse, the industry for the last 5 years have really been opening printers up, right? They're wireless now. Again, you have these cloud print capabilities. You can have remote fax capabilities. And that is very convenient, but is also more vulnerable. And the truth is, you know, those are just nothing more than little Linux computers running inside of a device that is ink, much like VoIP phones run the same way. It's just a little computer that has a very specific task, but a computer all the same.
Curtis Muir, Senior Advisor to the Director of the Office of Personnel Management. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Citizen-focused government means digital service delivery to constituents. The EIS contract replaces legacy networks with reliable, scalable, and secure broadband connections. And managed SD-WAN from Hughes allows agencies to utilize cloud-based applications with in-depth cybersecurity protections. Time is critical. Do not accept like for like. Ask your prime contractors about the Hughes managed SD-WAN solution or visit government.hughes.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Curtis Muir, Senior Advisor to the Director of the Office of Personnel Management. We've been discussing network modernization and cybersecurity. Getting higher up again into the issue of replacing VPNs, that is something, again, you share a lot of company across the government in trying to get past the VPN era as a mass deployed type of technology. What does the post-VPN comm world look like from your standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Zscaler is probably a good example of the type of tool that will work. I think it also looks a lot like just having strongly authenticated and secured systems that can be exposed, you know, directly to the internet in a high confidence way, right? Like you can log into your bank account directly from the internet, and they are really good at keeping that secure. For some of these systems that we have traditionally only thought of internally, and really put a lot of trust and confidence in our network to keep bad actors out, we need to get them engineered so that we have high confidence that even if we have a front door somebody can knock on, that we have them locked down. And you know, this is the old security through obscurity is not security, right? If you're just hiding it and hoping it that, you know, that's going to save you, once somebody, you know, gets in, and it's a matter of time, you know, everywhere until somebody gets in, that means they've got the keys to everything. And so, you know, we are working on securing everything from top to bottom.
And agencies are under a mandate, more or less, it keeps moving the deadline, but to use the EIS, GSA's Enterprise Infrastructure Services contract, the big EIS deal. Are you looking at it? Do you have plans for it? Is your opportunity in yet? What's your status there?
Yeah, so we're already partially migrated over and anticipate migrating the rest in the coming year. So we've made a lot of progress on that front. We're actually really proud of the work that our team has done to get with GSA and to get that running.
All right. And just a question about cybersecurity. We've talked about OPM's own cybersecurity needs and requirements. Do you also have advice from a hiring advice standpoint? That is to say, not a cyber policy standpoint, but you do oversee hiring and hiring policies across government. What's the latest thinking in getting those cybersecurity people into government that the EO would like to see and that I think agencies themselves would actually, in reality, like to have?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. One, you know, the direct hire authority should be used everywhere you can to get access to talent. We put it out there because we know there's a critical need in the government, and we're actually seeing agencies take us up on this quite a bit. You know, last I saw, it's 46% or so, just below 50% of cybersecurity hires in the government were brought on using that authority. So clearly it had a need and it's being used quite widely. The next is, you know, our work with NIST to establish and promote the NICE framework has been really, really valuable. And so when agencies think about, you know, what are their needs for hiring individuals, there's a ton of work that's already gone into what elements of a position description you need and what elements of a job posting. And so leveraging that is, you know, we think one of the highest value ways that you can get talent in a structured way. So between a direct hire authority and a lot of the work has already been done to help you get those formal PDs done, agencies should be able to, you know, turn on this quickly.
And quickly, how did you come to this work? What's your background? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I was actually at OPM 4 years ago, and I led the technical response to the breach at OPM. Since then, I've been off at a startup supporting federal government clients. So running healthcare.gov, running va.gov, running medicare.gov. And, you know, once we got a chance to come back and, you know, kind of help promote the work that OPM does, it was a chance to build this thing back to what we know the civil service needs. Really jumped at the chance to come and, you know, think about how we're supporting the civil service from astronauts to food inspectors to doctors. It's a chance like we haven't seen probably in 30 years to get the honor back to, you know, promoting the civil service all the way.
Curtis Muir, senior advisor to the director of the Office of Personnel Management. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for July, sponsored by Hughes Networks on Federal News Network.
Citizen-focused government means digital service delivery to constituents. The EIS contract replaces legacy networks with reliable, scalable, and secure broadband connections. And managed SD-WAN from Hughes allows agencies to utilize cloud-based applications with in-depth cybersecurity protections. Time is critical. Do not accept like for like. Ask your prime contractors about the Hughes managed SD-WAN solution or visit government.hughes.com.
Here's to various peoples from the Army Corps of Engineers on the Federal Executive Forum on Zero Trust Strategies, sponsored by Palo Alto Networks.
We've developed what we call a Zero Trust Playbook. The Zero Trust Playbook goes through about 12 different areas, because when most people talk about Zero Trust, you only see it maybe from about three different perspectives. But we've gone from all aspects of Zero Trust to include the training aspects.
To listen to the whole program from Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com, search Federal Executive Forum.
Zero Trust security has rapidly evolved from a theory to a practice, and Palo Alto Networks is committed to helping the government establish its Zero Trust strategy. We offer protection, whether your agency is on-prem, in the cloud, or using a hybrid combination of both. And since Zero Trust is a long-term practice that offers optimal security when implemented correctly, it makes sense to work with a trusted partner. For more information on Palo Alto Networks' end-to-end security framework, go to paloaltonetworks.com/usfederal.
For 15 years, the federal community of government managers, executives, appointees, and contractors has started its day with me, Tom Temin, host of The Federal Drive, our daily program of the latest headlines and interviews with people behind the news, your go-to source for information about everything from IT to pay and benefits. Be informed, stay informed. Start your morning with me, Tom Temin, on The Federal Drive. Listen on air on the Federal News Network app and on Spotify.